Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Mages, Sages, and Seers, I am proud to bring you the Satori Dialogues with Frater Serpentis Satori. But first, a quick announcement concerning our new adventure. We've done some specials on this before, and now it'll be a regular feature monthly. It's called Wrestling with Yeras, Meditations on Getting Older. Although the tale does not survive, Hercules' encounter with Yeras, known to us as old age, is preserved on ancient pottery. Yeras was said to be a child of Erebos and Nyx, the primordial goddess of night, or sometimes the issue of Nyx alone. As can be expected, in some depictions, our hero is engaged in staving off or actively fighting old age. The shriveled and diminutive Yeras doesn't seem to stand a chance. In other depictions, however, the encounter between Hercules and Yeras seems remarkably free of conflict, almost friendly. In fact, they're reaching out to each other. How do we reconcile these contradictory images? Perhaps they're different points in a greater tale. Perhaps they depict different incidents altogether. Alas, we may never know. Now that I'm in my 60s, with at least half of my life behind me, I'd like to venture a guess. At my age, the impulse to mitigate the effects of aging, which can no longer be ignored, is quite strong. Exercise, supplementation, and diet are recruited, and a variety of cosmetic, emotional, mental, and spiritual techniques are gradually added to our arsenal of weapons until Yeras is kept at bay. Some fight harder with drugs, surgery, and fringe, or some would say cutting-edge science. Although the struggle, acceptance eventually emerges, and with it, peace. Embracing old age and facing the finality of all mortal life allows you to appreciate the preciousness of each and every passing moment. When I personally found myself there, I made a promise. Until I die, I resolve to fully live. Onwards, and now here we go to Serpentis Satori. Greetings, Satori. How are you?
All right. All right.
I'm glad to hear that, and you have a very interesting topic in line for us today, Hermetic Magic Part 1, From the Gymnasium to the Rose Cross.
Because Hermeticism is so many things, and people who are not Hermetic do not understand both how complicated the gumbo is and how the pieces are slowly added into the gumbo. We have to begin at the beginning.
Okay. Let us begin at the beginning then.
We have already discussed iterant magicians and how common that was in the ancient world.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Hellenistic period, the thing that will become Hermeticism seems to be centered around certain gymnasia in certain places because it's absorbing, it's mixing both pre-Socratic philosophy and Neoplatonism with a little bit of Egypt for flavor and is becoming what will become Hermeticism. But at that point, it is just not witchcraft and not theurgy.
Now, the tale is that Hermes got his lore from a dragon, a primordial dragon. Is that something that's actively part of the mythology of the lore, or is that something added to the lore later on?
That probably is part of... That's probably an attempt to explain the transmission between Medea and that stream of Hellenic witchcraft and how that is already a part of iterant magicians before Alexander conquers Israel and Egypt. And those three things begin their slow boil together.
Now, magic exists, or existed at least in my childhood of Greece. You had magi of different types. You had some magi who were basically stage magicians, and they traveled from place to place. and did magic tricks for the most part, although they used elements of occultism in their patter. And then you had actual occultists who did occultism, and their occultism was post-Christian, and although it contained a lot of ancient elements, which could be called Hermetic, it really was an amalgam of Greek magic throughout the ages, including Greek Christian magic.
And, right, and all of that survived, and all of that survived, and in America we call that hoodoo. Because a lot of hoodoo's basis comes from mismatched Greek stuff and mismatched Egyptian stuff and mismatched Roman stuff, trying to reconcile, trying to give itself a self-identity.
And they didn't really identify themselves as hermetics. They identified themselves as Mayu, whether they were stage magicians or actual occultists, or sometimes people who were preserving folkloric healing methods and techniques. They weren't considered Mayi. They were considered healers or doctors, I guess, as you would call it.
Well, because the hermetic label comes much, much later. But that's why most hermetics consider that path to be proto-hermeticism, because it hasn't yet absorbed Gnosticism or Kabbalah, so what that is isn't exactly hermeticism anyway, and there's no alchemy, so it's missing some of the important parts of the car to be a car.
I had Mayi in my family, in my actual birth family, and one of them made it into the folklore books with his stories. So he's known outside of family tales now. And they didn't really seem to have a imposed series of studies put on them. It was kind of like whatever they could figure out on their own, or whatever came to them through interacting with other magicians, or the lore that
they...
Yeah,
it's much more like a hoodoo doctor. It's much more similar to hoodoo and hoodoo doctors than it is to John Dee and Aleister Crowley, because it's not there yet. We're not even halfway through all the things that hermeticism absorbs to become hermetic.
At what point did it become hermetic? Or I guess let's start with the process by which it became hermetic, if we're going to start in the gymnasium.
Well, we're starting there with there's this Greek folk magic that absorbs Egyptian influences to some extent. We don't really know for sure, but the Greco-Egyptian papyri gives us some clue what was absorbed and what wasn't. And since that's the first grimoire, and since Flowers' book Hermetic Magic is the closest we have to a historical book on all of these issues. Right, but you're completely correct. Those people wouldn't consider themselves to be Rosicrucians or hermetic alchemists because they're not hermetic yet. All of the other things that hermeticism is going to absorb over the next 1,000 years aren't in that soup yet. It's French onion soup. It's not gumbo.
How did these elements enter and become, quote-unquote, official or standard?
Much, much later. That begins to happen during the Rosicrucian period. Because during the Rosicrucian period, there is an attempt to standardize. Okay. Those errant magicians either live in a certain neighborhood and are the neighborhood equivalent of a doctor in hoodoo language, because what they do is almost exactly the same thing. They're doing their ancient Greek road opener oil and all that other stuff. But slowly...
Before you proceed, that still exists to this day. When I was young, I caught what was diagnosed here in America as a walking pneumonia. But when I was in Greece and I caught this by braving the Sumerian gorge, I went to a medical doctor, and they traveled from town to town just like the occult doctors did. And he told me that medicine couldn't cure me, that I needed to see a folk doctor. So he referred me to a folk doctor, and basically she had a incense burner and cloves, and she and her assistant would like be chanting. Some of it sounded like numbers and mathematical equations, some of it didn't. And as they chanted, at certain points, the cloves would blow up in the incense burner. It was very dramatic. I felt a little better, much better than I felt after seeing the medical doctor. But when I came, he was diagnosed as walking pneumonia, and they gave me stuff that, finally got it out of my system. But that still existed, at least in the time of my youth.
Because it's the same. And when people wonder where hoodoo came from whatever folk magic was during the Roman period that never really went away in Greece, Italy, and France. And when that recombines in New Orleans, everybody realizes they're doing the same thing. And then everything gets its wacky New Orleans name. But a lot of that is old world stuff anyway that goes from that period.
Understood.
And then we're going to have to deal with how Judaism mixes in and then it ceases to become that kind of folk magic. But we're going to have to do a separate episode on Kabbalah, because Kabbalah is a very complicated animal in its own right. But one of the major differences between a doctor and a hermetic is a heavier reliance on Jewish magic and more Gnostic influence. Because when you mix in the alchemy and the Jewish magic and the Gnosticism, it begins to become Hermeticism. And then the Christians burn everything down. Right after that happens, Christianity takes over.
That was true in very many spheres of ancient learning, be it healing-centered or otherwise, unfortunately.
So some of it continues in the more northern parts of Europe and England. Some of it continued in the Eastern Empire, but very slowly Christianity does what it can to crush that. And thus we begin the Dark Age. But if you're Hermetic, that period is normally thought of as the Grimoire Age. Because everything is still local. Everything is still these guys passing on what they know and learning from other guys. If you know stuff, right before you die, you publish some stuff. And that stuff only makes sense to other guys who know the stuff you know. Those books are completely incomprehensible to someone who doesn't know what that stuff's about. They're very pretty books, but they're completely incomprehensible. An alchemy book is completely incomprehensible. And Jung actually does a little comedy routine in one of his books about the wacky Latin of alchemic books.
I have to adjust the time. Something happened and it reset the timer. So hopefully that did it.
Oh.
Okay. Onwards.
And so during the Grimoire period, there is no direct connection between these guys. They just publish stuff, and it circulates a lot like in the Ninth Gate movie, because the Ninth Gate movie is a very good understanding of what that period had to have been like, because you're a lone dude looking for the truth, and you have to gain it piece by piece by piece by going on a road trip.
Well, not so much with a road trip, but that persisted into modern times. During my childhood, I remember if you wanted an occult book, it was a whole process. You had to frequent occult bookstores. You had to go to antiquarian bookstores. Sometimes the antiquarian bookstores would find it for you. That took months, sometimes years, and lots of money. Then you got the book, and maybe a sentence or two were useful to you, but you found out about other books. and the quest continued. I never found my copy of the Arbitel way back during that time. But now on the internet, you have different translations available for free of just about everything you could imagine. Plus, there are all sorts of really good scholarly and creative translations of these texts as well. But the quest was part of it, and it took a while to like frame the question.
The quest is still part of it because there are lots of books you can't find online. There are lots of books that are only available through special publishers. And there are lots of books that don't have ISBNs.
That's very true. But Google searches will eventually find you, point you in the right direction, and then you can take it from there.
Yeah. And then we have Cornelius Agrippa's Books of Occult Philosophy. He ends up being the guy who says it. He's the guy who says it. He's the guy who explains how to use all those wacky books on your bookshelf.
So that's a great step forward.
That's a huge step. The people like me argue that that is the first Hermetic book because what we were before Agrippa is witch doctory. We're not Hermetic till we understand all those charts and tables in Agrippa. We're not Hermetic till we have that synthesis with the Kabbalah that's in Agrippa. We were something entirely different until Agrippa said, no, this is the occult philosophy of Hermeticism. This is what we do.
And did he decide that, or was that something that he was he said in respect to a particular tradition that had been hidden?
I think that tradition had been around because that tradition is the quiet part out loud for the books that have been coming out for centuries. He just decides, he just gets frustrated with the misinformation, I assume, and decides that because there's no one yet to impose oaths on him, he decides to publish those books and get the truth out there and deal with the consequences.
And how did that change occultism and the organizations, rather than being the lone individual in the small groups? Did that allow for large organizations again?
That takes a little while because that book has to circulate, has to be passed on from teacher to student for a little while. And we're still stuck in this weird age where there are hundreds of grimoires and hundreds of alchemic texts. And you're still wading through all these books, half of which are useful and half of which are not. Agrippa's book just gives you the practice that everybody else gives you the theory for. But I have always been one who argued that Agrippa didn't invent what is in his book. He published it. Because that information would have been standardized since we stopped being witch doctors and began to become hermetics. When we started absorbing angelology and Gnosticism and alchemy and all the other things that took us from being witch doctors to the medieval hermetic thing.
Well, I happen, as you know, to like Gnosticism, not so much because of what Gnosticism says, any particular tradition within Gnosticism, but Gnosticism seems to be a larger conversation wrestling with the question, are the creative powers that brought us into being good or bad, good or evil? And
we should do a separate episode on that because
okay.
that like Jewish magic is its own labyrinth. And at this point, it's just important to understand the difference between what the Mayu did versus what Agrippa did is the not becoming French onion soup, We put the sarsaparilla in there and it turned brown, and then we add some other stuff with the alchemy and the Gnosticism and the Jewish magic, and adding the Jewish magic and the Gnosticism and the alchemy transforms what we're doing from witch doctory stuff to medieval hermeticism.
Now, one of the areas that I've been focusing on lately is the fact that Crete and especially Cyprus are right next to the ancient Near East, or the Middle East, as it's called today. So there was cultural diffusion of an unprecedented order taking place there throughout ancient and modern history. So a lot of the information that you're getting is the same information, but from slightly different perspectives, depending on what the cultural take and the mythology have to say about the particular things. But the masks of the gods are fairly easy to discern there, although there are some enigmatic masks. But that kind of adds a whole other dimension to the study of what lore has survived.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been the admixture of Jewish magic, Egyptian magic, and Greek magic had to have been going on before the
yes.
Christians burned everything. We just can't, they just burned all our proof. So the first time we know that is what's going on is when Agrippa publishes his books.
We have Norse books, too, that reflect the same process, like the Galdra book I'm thinking of, where it's a combination of Mediterranean magic with some Norse runic and mythological material thrown in. But it's very similar to other grimoires that I've seen. In being the same
it's the northern answer to the Greco-Egyptian papyri. Even though they have a very large age difference, they're very parallel.
Now, is the information contained in the Greco-Roman papyri? I know it's still practiced today, but gumbo recipes evolve over time. And I'm sure, because I've had gumbos that tasted very different, even though they were the same in concept. Did that happen to the lore as well? Did you get like different flavors of hermeticism that are reflected in today's?
Yeah, but everything until the Rosicrucian period is very much teacher-centric. Like you would learn about. The example I'm going to use is if before the Rosicrucian period, different cities had different teachers based on different lineages, based on whatever was going on in those cities and secret history. So before the Rosicrucian period, if you wanted to be a wizard, you pretty much had to choose between Prague or Marseille. And those would be very different educations because those are places with very different languages. And Marseille was part of the Roman Empire. Marseille would be connected to all of that Egypto-Roman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Dark Ages, when everything is about teacher and lineage, every teacher would do things a little bit differently.
Right.
Because it depends how much Gnosticism is mixed into their practice, how much Judaica is mixed into their practice, how much they're a witch doctor to pay their rent. All of those things factor together. And before the manifestos of the Rose Cross, that was the situation we were in. And that may be the situation we're almost back in today, because we may have gone all the way back to that in the Internet Dark Age.
Now, you use the term Rosicrucian in a unique way here, one that surprised me because you describe my particular way of doing things as Rosicrucian, and I would never have made that connection. I consider it more theosophical. Can you define Rosicrucian in the context that you're using it in this talk?
Okay, so after Agrippa, we have a little bit of a time lapse while smart people read that book. All over the world, smart people be reading that book, realizing we're all the same thing. We're all doing what this Agrippa guy says we're doing. And what we're doing isn't what a witch does. And what we're doing isn't what a priest of the Morrigan does. What we're doing is completely different from what everybody else is doing. That's why we need all these weird charts and tables and planetary squares and all that stuff. So then the Rosicrucian manifestos are published. And the point of that, from the way I'm telling the story, is that essentially a couple of wizards decide, hey, let's form a guild. Let's put all this knowledge back together. Let's reassemble everything. Let's see what everybody knows together. And thus begins the Rosicrucian movement. Because it's important to understand. No, it's important. No, careful with that. All of these teachers all over Europe read those books and suddenly decide they're Rosicrucian. Overnight. Poof. You're not an Agrippaist, you're a Rosicrucian. Poof. So whatever you were doing before you read FAMA and before you read the manifestos, you're still doing. You're just now not a lone wolf hermeticist. You're part of the Rosicrucian movement. Rather than being a witch doctor with Kabbalah, poof, you're Rosicrucian. And then they start coming up with rules for how to form orders. But Rosicrucianism is however you combine all of those hermetic elements within your lineage. Because there are Rosicrucian groups even within California and Chicago that are both Rosicrucian groups and legitimate that believe very, very different things. But since our gumbo is made from all these different weird ingredients, not all the gumbos are the same gumbo.
Right.
Not everybody puts shrimp in their gumbo. Not everybody puts okra in their gumbo. Because a lot of Rosicrucian groups are much more mystical than others. Dion Fortune's family is much more mystical and much less dark than some of the other German and French groups. Because at that point, to differentiate ourselves from witches and clerics, everybody who believes what the manifesto says becomes a Rosicrucian overnight. So then we start inventing passwords, and then we start inventing all of the rituals, and very slowly that becomes a thing. And that doesn't happen overnight. That takes a while.
And that involves the story of Christian Rosenkreutz and all the
right.
nightly stuff and so forth. That was part of the emergent mythology as well.
Well, if you embrace that mythology, you became a Rosicrucian. There are holdovers, but those holdovers either have trouble with the mythology or are usually bad magicians. Those are usually people doing demonology and bad stuff.
Now, Apollonius, also known as Bruce McLennan, also known as John Apsopaeus. He's one of our theurgy panelists, or one of the Llewellyn theurgists. He's pointed out on several shows, and rightly so, that you get to a point where you realize that a lot of the knowledge in, you know, the occult lore is based on outmoded ways of looking at the world. So it's technically wrong. Like the planets do not are not in the order in which they're preserved from everything from antiquity to, you know, fairly recently. So you have a projection map of the human mind at a particular point of time. You have a snapshot, and connections are made through our projections. But it's not an accurate the same way the days of the week and the planetary correspondences. That's not the order of the actual planets either. But that was the best understanding at the time, and we've kept it because it became something else and became a useful tool. But it's a good starting point for people who are exploring planetary mythology or planetary lore or planetary magic. And that's been my impression of a lot of the occult lore, that, you know, basically by looking at it, you could figure out when it was put together because those were the prevalent beliefs of educated humanity at the time. And they're technically wrong on a lot of levels. However, they're right in terms of the systems in our
on the Gnostic level. They're right on the level of experience if you use them properly.
Right. So I guess if you make enough gumbo and you taste it and see what works for you and the people who you're serving gumbo to, eventually you'll come up with your own recipe for making gumbo. And as long as people love your gumbo and you love your gumbo, then that's your official gumbo recipe or grandma's gumbo recipe.
Right.
Which is passed down from generation to generation.
But still gets tweaked a little bit now and then because things happen.
Right.
But it is just like that, and that's the thing about people who are not hermetic, don't understand about hermeticism, is we have almost 4,000 years of being independent contractors before the people that choose to join John Dee's union join the union. And not everybody joins the union.
Right. Those are good analogies, by the way. Thank you. They clarify matters a great deal.
No, I mean, that's part of why we needed to start here, because you and I needed to have this conversation, and I realized there is enough historical background to this that we could discuss this on the record. Like,
uh-huh.
The best book, other than the Rosicrucian Manifesto, is actually called Rosicrucian Enlightenment, because that explains this next period. Because this next period is Europe marinating in the Rose Cross and the Hundred Years' War. Are those connected?
I'm Googling it.
Makes you think. Makes you think.
Yeah, I'm
but
sure.
That's exactly
a lot of occult lore is very much the product of its times. Even more recent occult lore, like my current planetary journey, which I like the labors, they interact and intersect, and I do them continuously, is bringing me into all sorts of material that is universally true. But then it's very much a product of its time and reflecting the prejudices and viewpoints of the time in which it was penned.
And that's always the problem with any source.
Right.
Any book has the problem of being written by the guy who wrote it. Which is why there are such long arguments about, like, teaching the students how to cook. Because if they don't know how to cook right, they're not going to make the gumbo right. They don't want to put the clams and the shrimp in the gumbo too soon. That'll screw it all up.
And some recipes, herbs are called different phrases, or they have different phrases attached to them. So some of them are very colorful. I know in reading grimoires, some of the ingredients seem fanciful or non-existent, but they're actually specific herbs that are called that, or have tales that give them those properties. So
A lot of herbs have different names in different parts of England.
I can believe that. I'm sure that's true throughout Europe, where until, again, within our lifetime.
It's easier for me to explain in England because I have contact with a bunch of English witches, but they both often explain all the time, like, or whatever they call that in your country.
Yeah, I can believe that.
And even though we have all these books on herbalism now, you end up with the same situation about, like, well, in England, it's this. And I mean, then you're getting into the dialect question again. But yeah, you're dealing with that issue. And during the Rosicrucian period, it's easier to understand what happened in the Rosicrucian period as understanding that, like, we believe this mythology, we believe this ethical system, we believe in Christ who is the light, but we don't really believe in the church, and the church really doesn't care for us a lot.
And that was fairly common as well.
Yeah.
Until it became illegal to think in terms of ways that weren't orthodox.
Which is the advantage England had during this period, because England had already cut itself free from the church in the previous generation. So England had the advantage of not being under thrall, which is why Dr. D can start traveling Europe and building his union.
He had the royal imprimatur as well, so he was protected in that way.
He's also building British intelligence.
Yes, and that's been part of the
how that is connected to the Rose Cross is still an open question, but whether he was traveling to build MI6 or whether he was traveling to build the Rose Cross, or whether he was combining politics and magic, because he was on the road anyway, and it was his road show.
Well, that still happens, and that's happened with very many magical figures throughout history that we know of.
Yeah. But that's a better way of understanding that, and this version of the narrative doesn't require the Templars. The Templars don't need to be part of the story. And people who try to add them into the story don't understand what we've been talking about. That's not a necessary element in the gumbo.
But it's part of the...
I know you want beignets with your gumbo. Yeah, I understand wanting beignets with a gumbo, but the beignets are not in the gumbo.
But they're part of the mystique of the gumbo. Part of the story. And that's hard to accept. I know at least it was for me. That some things have nothing to do with the objective, but they're part of the story, and they're there because they're part of a story.
They're part of a story, and that story doesn't become the story till the Freemasons exist. That story is centuries later. There's no mention of the Templars in the manifestos at all. Because that used to be a common bet against me in New Orleans, and I'm like, okay, show me. Show me where it says something overtly about that. They talk about our hidden brethren, but that can mean anything. The line about hidden brethren can mean anything. The line about hidden brethren means exactly what I've been saying.
But that's exactly the part of the story. They were behind the scenes. You know, that's part of that story.
That's part of that mythology.
Right.
But that mythology is a later mythology that has something to do with someone else creating Freemasonry as an add-on to Rosicrucianism. They're trying to make the union much more formal, and not everybody buys into that. again.
One thing that must be kept in mind, too, is Donald Tyson, I don't know if he's still around anymore, but he and I had conversations about this about a decade or no more than a decade. It's been a couple of decades already ago.
Yeah, he and I did as well.
A lot of the systems that you're going to be getting, whether they be of magic, whether they be of mind control, whether they be of exercise, physical exercise and building muscles, or building speed or building, you know, whatever you want to build, depends on what your goal happens to be. So if you want to be a runner, the exercises you do and the things that you eat are going to be different than if you want to be a bodybuilder or if you want to be a power lifter
right.
or if you want to be a baseball player. So people are devising systems all the time, and a lot of these systems will not take you to the place you want to be. So first you have to figure out, you know, which systems will actually do what you want them to do. And some people lie about their systems because they want to guard their system. And that's something that's a reality in occultism as well. But it's also true in bodybuilding and in mind control and so forth. So you're gonna experience a lot of things that you're going to have to drop because they don't take you there. And it takes a while to figure out what takes you there. And then that becomes kind of like the ladder or the roadmap. And
the ladder of lights. So there was a book called Ladder of Lights at one point.
Okay. So, but a lot of people go into magic or exercise or mental conditioning, thinking that anything they read will take them there. And in the beginning, when they know nothing, that's kind of true. But later on, when they know a little something, they have to actually study the material that was left by people who got to where they want to go, because they know the way. And to know that they're not sharing everything about getting to where you want to go, there's some things you're going to have to figure out. When I had my television show, for instance, nobody gave me any insight until I figured out how to do something. Once I figured out how to do it on my own, then people had all sorts of helpful advice. But until I figured out how to surmount the certain obstacles, nobody was helpful. It was making fringe television or
because that was your trial. That was your trial. It's the same way in initiatory magic, that until we know you are no longer contagious, we don't want to talk to you very much. Once you cease to be contagious and the fever has broken, we're like, oh, how'd that go for you?
Very true. So
you're fine now. You're fine.
Right.
Why did you do it that way? Why?
Because it didn't come together in that way. Now that I'm in my 60s, as I announced earlier, my perspective has changed on a lot of things, and I'm getting information in whole new ways that I never would have thought possible before, and much faster than I ever would have believed possible before. And in truth, some of the insights I've gotten have been through experiences that I would have categorized as bad or I would have done differently. But they actually gave me the experience that I needed and the perspective that I needed to understand certain things that I never would have understood if I hadn't been through those
experiences. If you hadn't taken the trial, if you hadn't gone through the initiation. And you can't explain a trial to someone unless they're standing there.
Right.
And then you don't want to explain, you have to wait for them to figure it out.
And you also get to see why certain information is kept secret or is ridiculed publicly when privately it's in use by looking at what happened to what people are calling now the law of attraction. And the abuses of the law of attraction that we're seeing on global and certainly national scales in various arenas in life, and all the misinformation that's flooding out there continuously, and the mythology that's built up around that, the wisdom of not making certain things public is also something that changed my mind about such things, because when I was younger, I believe that all this information should be public and available, and now it's like, well, maybe not. Maybe.
Well, think about how the Freemasons feel because Israel Regardie and Aleister Crowley published what they published. publishing all that stuff, it became no longer secret, and you could buy it at Barnes & Noble. So my entire generation didn't need Blue Lodge. We could just buy Magic in Theory and Practice and The Golden Dawn and teach ourselves almost everything. Almost everything is in those two books. So if you were a smart teenager and you own both those books and you followed the curriculum, you could AP test out of the four lower grades. As long as you had diaries and could pass the tests, that was it. And it happened to my entire, everybody smart in my generation did more or less that. And if that information had never been public, what would have happened over the past 30 years would have been significantly different.
Yes, I can imagine so.
So imagine how the Masons feel about what Crowley did. Because he gives away the whole game. If you go through all of Crowley's books, he gives away the whole game.
But you have to
There's very little he does not say. There's very little he does not say.
But you have to decipher Crowley. And Crowley set some traps. It's been years since I really focused on Crowley, but Crowley hid his information without hiding his information. And there were also some like things in there that would screw you up if you did them the way that they were written.
Yeah. That's why you needed to have access to other books and access to other thought and not just take him literally. But that's the best example of that is that's the independent teacher blowing up the union.
So in terms of magia that is hermetic as opposed to being something else, what is the ultimate goal? Like, for instance, some systems of magic.
The great work. Well, no, it's the great work or the magnum opus, which are both different symbols of the same thing, which is that you go through the alchemic process, you become one, then you turn around and you're sort of like a bodhisattva. You turn around, you have this brief period of superpower, where you can alter almost everything. And then when your power dims, you're more like a bodhisattva and it's your job to help other people get to those levels that are impossible to explain.
But there's steps after that that you discover. And that is very true. And I found what you said very true in the course of my incarnational journey. But now, again, I'm in my 60s, and I'm finding that there are levels of understanding beyond that. And it's important. Everything you said is important. But there are other understandings.
Right, because initiation never ends. One of the flaws in our systems and our initiations and our orders is that Crowley's right, but initiation never ends. As long as you are here, there are doors that will open that weren't there yesterday. But yeah, the goal is the same as the goal is in every path. The goal is to become one with the one. But unlike other paths where you are absorbed into the one, you do what Neo does, and you save the world.
And that is the choice of the bodhisattva, as you said. The bodhisattva attains Satori, but...
That's the only word that explains what can't be explained about that situation. That's the label that there is for that.
They call them in theosophy avatars or world teachers, but they also call them bodhisattvas, too.
because that's the goal of every path. It's just that Hermeticism, because of its weirder origin story, is very focused on the outcome.
And during the days of the Theurgists, it was the Egyptian Hermes or Thoth. It was the Roman Hermes when Rome was emerging with the Caesars or Mercury. And then it was the Greek Hermes, who was, of course, Hermes. They were the predominant.
I've always thought the race trade Hermes was the ancient attempt to explain the union.
Okay.
But the Emerald Tablet and Thrice Great Hermes was the old code for the Union. That I am not an Egyptian priest. I serve Thrice Great Hermes. Would you like some road opener oil? Because of all we lost, we don't know how embedded the Union was. But people that try to make the Union look like it was super powerful do come back to the Tenant Square. Because the Tenant Square and the places where the Tenant Square are in the ancient world aren't bars, but they could be bars. What is that building for? Because it's always not on Temple Row. It's near the temples. But it's also sort of near the merchant district. So what is that building doing? What is that? And why is it everywhere? Because I also think that was probably code for the Union back in the ancient world.
The Union, you mean of the Greeks, the Egyptians?
The people who become Hermeticism. The people who become Hermetic. Back in the Roman world, use Thrice Great Hermes as code to say, I'm not a priest of Hecate, I serve Thrice Great Hermes. I'm not a priest, I work for Thrice Great Hermes. What I do is not priestcraft.
Okay, I guess.
I'm a sorcerer, I'm not a cleric. I'm a sorcerer, I'm not a cleric.
And what is the distinction between a sorcerer and a cleric for those who aren't aware?
Clerics do clerical magic. Clerics ask God to do stuff for you. When you're a sorcerer, like we were talking about the Bodhisattva, you are part of the source. What you do comes from the source because the source allows you to do that, thus making you a sorcerer, not a cleric. Your power comes directly from the source, which means all of the trappings of clergy are completely unnecessary for a sorcerer. Because all our power comes directly from the source, guided by love and will and energy and however that is explained to you. However you like to explain that to yourself, that's fine.
Yeah, that is an important distinction. It seems that the clerical path is antithetical to the realization that you are one with the one, and so is everything else. And it can't not
one
be
one with everything, like the Buddhist joke. Like the Buddhist joke about one with everything. Yeah. Because it is antithetical to that, because it is all about the power of this divinity. Because clerics and warlocks in D&D draw their power from a specific thing. Through slightly different means in D&D, but it amounts to the same thing.
I find
because warlocks in D&D do their powers through a pact, which allows you to do weirder things in new D&D, and that's also separate from being a sorcerer, because you made a pact with an entity, and that entity does stuff for you, so you do stuff for it, which is also not sorcery.
I find that the clerical perspective helps preserve the stories, and the stories are a great way to enter this path.
It's not. You need clerics to have temples, and then we need those temples for the temple libraries. And clerics are more willing to do some things than sorcerers, because their job is to teach and to heal. But they're functionally different, and they're completely different directions of life. Which is part of why the Rose Cross wasn't so fond of the church, and vice versa.
Now, are there any organizations that are hermetic that you feel best preserve the recipe for the gumbo that is hermeticism?
I think if we pull together some of the people you have who are Rosicrucian and hermetic, and we allow different groups within the union to have their own union shop, so you can see what that guy makes and check out what that guy makes, that's fine. But we are probably going to have to build a few other hermetic schools in the near future as gap fillers for groups that either don't want to have such a public door as Hercules Invictus, or are virtually extinct, to my knowledge. So we may have to do a little bit of creative work with the Hermetica around Invictus, but that isn't that hard, because that's just a matter of restructuring the gumbo.
Understood. And last, our conversation is running out of time. How can people contact you or find your work and enter your world?
My book, Thelemic Alchemy, is still available on Amazon, but for now I'm letting people contact me through you till we get everything up and running, wherever that goes, however quickly that goes.
Understood, and I thank you for years worth of conversations. They're always challenging, and they always lead to greater insights, so I'm appreciative of that.
All right, I will talk to you soon.
I will talk to you soon, and thank you to our wonderful audience for tuning in. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Have a wonderful day.